As baby boomers get older, they're being promised all sorts of things that will keep them younger longer. Up next, Susan Jacoby explores the implications of this new old age. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.
WNYC receives support from the Heart Institute, New York Center for Minimally Invasive Cardiac Bypass Surgery. More information about the McGinn Technique and the Heart Institute at bypasstheordinary.com or 888-HEART-78. 92nd Street Y, presenting neurologist and author Oliver Sacks and science author Jonathan Weiner, who explores society's quest for immortality on February 10th at 8 p.m. Tickets at 92y.org/talks. The Art Students League of New York, professional artists teaching the practice of making art since 1875. Monthly registration on 57th Street, 212-247. 4510 or theartstudentsleague.org.
Punk rocker, political commentator, and actor Henry Rollins is turning 50. Today on Soundcheck, the frontman of the seminal hardcore band Black Flag stops by to talk about age, music, and more. That's coming up at 2 and 10 on 93.9 FM WNYC. The eldest baby boomers are turning 65, and the generation that created the youth revolution is now facing having to live with the inevitable effects of aging. Despite some of the promises we've been hearing from medical science and Madison Avenue, in her latest book, Never Say Die, Susan Jacoby says the truth is that old age for many of the boomers will be marked by a decrease in faculties, income, and comfort. It's published by Pantheon. I'm very pleased that it brings Susan Jacoby to our show. Welcome back.
Nice to be here.
Aren't the members of the baby boom generation much healthier, better fed, and more active and engaged than any generation before it?
Well, that's the thought, but here is one of the problems with that. This may be true of a small segment of upper middle class boomers who largely control the media. But in fact, one of the things that we're learning from a big study is the baby boomers are fatter than their parents, and their health habits are getting worse as they get older. A big study done by the Medical University of South Carolina showed that the baby boomers, we pride ourselves on how hip and thin we are, but it doesn't accord with the reality out there. The baby boomers are fatter than their parents by quite a bit.
So when people joke that 50 is a new 30, are they just fantasizing? If that's the case, by the way, couldn't 80 turn out to be the new 50?
Wouldn't it be pretty to think so? I started writing this book because I went to a panel at the World Science Festival, and the title of it was 90 is the New 50.
90 is?
Yes. The atmosphere, and really what I'm writing about is not so much about the healthier young old, who are people in their 60s and 70s.
Who are being told by their doctors that they have the lungs and prostate and heart of a 30-year-old.
Right. But the old in their 80s and 90s, in which for every generation, things change quite dramatically. And the fact is that half of people over the age of 85 have dementia, of which Alzheimer's is the leading cause. And it is wonderful to hope that there will be a cure or at least something to delay the onset of Alzheimer's, but so far there is not.
Is Alzheimer's that prevalent? I thought it was only a fairly small percentage. But there are many dementias in old age, aren't there?
Alzheimer's is the leading one. But the reason that you think it's less prevalent is this: every show that ever talks about Alzheimer's uses a figure which is true. Only 10% of people over 65 have Alzheimer's, but half of people over 85 do. The risk of Alzheimer's doubles in every five-year period after 65. So it's almost a lie to reassure us that this can't happen to us because, quote, only 10% of people over 65 have Alzheimer's. You might as well say that only X percent of people die in any given year. It includes all the 1- and 2-year-olds who don't.
So being really healthy at 60 in no way guarantees anything for the future.
Not really. It's a good thing. That is something that has been hoped and has been promoted for a long time, that healthier living, that a lot of exercise, a lot of veggies, not drinking, drinking moderately, particularly not smoking, doing crossword puzzles. And nobody hoped for that more than scientists. National Institutes of Health did a big review of this released in August. And the scientists and doctors themselves on the review committee were devastated to see that what the conclusion they reached is there is absolutely no reliable scientific evidence this is true. It doesn't mean it's not great to have those health habits, but it's great because it keeps you and I moving in our 60s. It's not a guarantee that we're going to fulfill this fantasy and drop dead at 95 without ever being sick in the middle of making love or climbing a mountain.
Don't you come from a family where the women have lived well into old age?
They have lived into old age. My grandmother lived to be 99, and my mother is now still living in 90. And the last years of my grandmother's life was hell. She did have all her wits about her, but she had serious physical problems that confined her to a nursing home for 3 years. I remember so well the last time I saw her, which was just a few months before she died at the age of 99. And I took her out of the nursing home to a nearby riverbank, and she just looked around and she said, "It's good to be among the living again." My grandmother said often that she wished she had died several years earlier.
The boomers have worshipped youth, but that wasn't the case with their parents' generation. That generation couldn't wait to grow up, and they didn't realize that just by turning 30, they would become untrustworthy in the eyes of the boomers. Bob Dylan, I think, said, "Don't trust anybody." Was he the one who said, "Don't trust anybody over 30?
I don't remember, but I do remember Philip Roth wrote a wonderful novel once in which he said that he belonged to the generation which everybody wanted to be 30.
Yeah.
But there is the very word old is one that is not often used. I used a lot in this book because I think that is the right word. I don't think it's a value judgment to apply to people in their 80s and 90s. But instead, the Today Show kicked off the year. It's typical media propaganda about the greatness of the new old age. The baby boomers turning 65, what's the segment titled? Forever Young. And not one of the experts on the panel used the word old. They used the word older. Older than whom, I ask you.
Well, this is not just the United States. I'm very aware of a youth culture when I travel to Europe as well.
Yes, but it's more of a youth culture for the young. I don't think that the stigma about the old. But the odd thing is that while there is still a stigma about the word old and saying you're old, there is also an unrealistic view of how great old age is, in that it is great to be old as long as you don't display any of the typical problems of very old people. So a lot of older people, my mother has talked to me about this, put a lot of energy into putting on a happy face because they know that there are things that are considered old. And one of them is complaining about your health.
In the past, not that many people lived to real old age, so the really old were treated differently than they are today, weren't they?
Well, first of all, it's hard to assess because so few people lived into the age of dependency, or so many fewer people. But in fact, one of the things that I point out in this book is the idea that the old were always worshipped and well taken care of in America is one of our American myths about this wonderful time. And the best example of it is this, that in Puritan colonial America, the old were respected. And the New England Meeting House, which was the town meeting, which is the classic democratic institution, the old were seated in the front. In the period, in the 20 years after the Revolution, they called it seating the meeting. New England towns reversed the order of the meeting. The richest were seated at the front with the old in back and everybody else to the rear. If there isn't a clearer indication of a change in the status of the old than that, I don't know what it is.
Well, there was a time when the elderly were considered to have gained a lot over their lifetime, that they were the wisest people. When did that change?
Well, you see Thomas Paine, and more important in the 19th century, Thoreau saying, "Not true." You don't. But what Thoreau wasn't saying is there weren't any wise old people, although he didn't live to be old. But what he was saying was, if you're a fool when you're 30 or 40, the chances are you'll be even more of a fool when you're 60 or 70. And I think there are lots of wise old people. They didn't get wise by being old. They were wise initially, and you don't not only that. And you don't get a better character by being old either. If you're a mean person, a nasty, abusive parent when you're 40, you're probably not going to be a very nice granny or grandpa when you're 70.
Susan Jacoby's latest book is Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. It's published by Pantheon. Negative attitudes toward the old changed, didn't they, during the Civil War? What happened then?
During the Civil War?
I guess it was maybe a little later, the social Darwinist movement.
Well, no. The social Darwinist movement after the Civil War actually brought forth some of the most negative attitudes toward the old. The famous doctor who came from England but who was responsible for creating Johns Hopkins, William Osler, he made a controversial speech which was reported everywhere in, I think it was 1913. But I could be wrong. It might have been 1903. I don't remember the exact date, in which he said that basically nobody over 40 could do good work and men over 60 should be chloroformed. He didn't have any, he said that women might be allowed to live longer because, after all, you could still do housework after you were 60.
And women still do live longer, don't they?
Women do live longer.
Although, isn't that changing a bit as women take more stressful jobs? And
There's no evidence that it is. Two-thirds of people over 85 or women, coming up to 85% in the 90s.
That idea,
nobody knows exactly why that is either.
That idea that the old are a drain on society has actually caused a certain amount of political controversy. There was a governor of Colorado who said that if the elderly would simply take themselves off of life support systems,
right,
they would save society a lot of money.
Well, actually, there are plenty – coming from a family in which my grandmother and mother made living wills specifying that long before living wills were fashionable. But in fact, there are a lot of old people who want to specify that, and we don't have systems. Only 30% of people have living wills, and it's not because the old are so crazy about care that can't help them. It's because people and doctors themselves are very, very reluctant with this subject. And it's one of the reasons why it's tragic that as a bowing to the religious right, they've taken off the table just paying for an occasional consultation about what your wishes are about end-of-life care. The point being that it's a good thing for your doctor to know and for you to write down, do you want to be kept on life support if you can't recover? Your husband or wife should know, and so should your adult children.
I've had a number of people come on the show talk about all sorts of advances in medicine, which will include the ability to transplant all the aging parts of our body and keep us going, who knows, maybe forever. Is this just boomer optimism? If that is an optimistic outlook?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't describe this as an optimistic outlook. This is just another version of the fountain of youth syndrome, and there's nothing new about it. That there are going to be scientific advances is sure. That there are going to be advances in the near future that will get to the real scourges of old age is very unlikely. Just now, this 90 is the new 50 panel I went to. There was a researcher, the founder of pharmaceutical company, peddling the wonders of resveratrol, an enzyme found in red wine. The company that bought his pharmaceutical—
I'll drink to that.
Well, unfortunately, you would have to drink the resveratrol in 1,000 bottles of red wine to have it work on mice, on men, as it did on mice. The company that bought out that company has just suspended its resveratrol trials. It feels that that this is not a fruitful scientific pathway. It would be wonderful. My old friend Bob Butler, whom you've probably interviewed, mm-hmm, at some point on your shows, who died of leukemia last year, he was the one voice of common sense on this panel and a scientist. And I interviewed him several months before he died for my book. He said, look, I'm a scientist. I would like nothing better than to wake up tomorrow morning and read that there really is a cure for Alzheimer's instead of just people trying to make profits by peddling the idea that there is going to be one. But he said, hope really isn't a plan of action. We have to think about this as it is. And if something good comes along, that's fine.
Well, don't we assume things will come along because we're living longer because of things that have come along? Penicillin, we have pretty much eradicated polio. More recently, we've been able to do joint and hip replacements and allow people who might otherwise have been inactive to resume their lives. And all sorts of other things have come along that have helped us live more fruitful lives into an older age. Are you saying that all of that is just keeping us going until the Alzheimer's kicks in?
Not just Alzheimer's. I'm saying that those are things which a vaccine for polio simply, you know, primes your immune system. Dealing with viruses and bacteria or making a knee replacement surgery, these really are – they are taking rusty parts and they're responding to a well-known immune mechanism. Whatever we know is that the diseases of old age that lead to death, that there is a biological clock, that it's possible it could be extended. I wouldn't be surprised if people will live longer.
Well, we're pretty much
– No.
We're holding many cancers in check.
Right,
Whereas in the past they would have killed us at 40 or 50.
Absolutely. But eventually one of the things that happens with old age is that your body literally wears out. In other words, there's no transplant for the immune system now. There are scientists who think that someday there will be an anti-aging drug to slow things, you know, to slow down the process at least. Now, I leave it to you to whether this would be a good or a bad thing. But the genetic processes that are involved in aging are just infinitely more complicated than any of the medical miracles that you and I have seen throughout our lifetime.
Did you see the article in the Metro section yesterday's Times about the 92-year-old squash player?
Oh, the media loves articles like this. And we would all like to be 92-year-old squash players. We would all like to be Betty White in Demand for Late Night We would all like to be John Paul Stevens, who's writing these brilliant essays since his retirement for the Supreme Court. And you can hope that and do everything to be active and keep your mind working. But those people are exceptions. And the idea that if you live into your 90s, that this is something that's going to be the case for everybody is wrong. The media just loves to – we'd all like to be the exceptions. It's very human.
Is that why the health habits of the boomers have been exaggerated, as you suggest, by the media?
Yes, and there is also a real class difference in this country in the health habits of people. The fact is life expectancy actually has been dropping for women in Appalachia in the South, chiefly because they've taken up smoking. There is a huge class disparity in access to health care and in knowledge of the habits that can keep people healthier at any stage of their lives.
What did the Long Life Family Study tell us about factors that enable some families to produce members that not only live into their 80s and 90s, but retain much of their health and vigor?
Well, according to scientists who've looked at it, what it tells us is they had really good genes. This is the chicken and egg problem. Long life does seem to run in certain families, but are they living longer because they do certain things, or are they able to do certain things because they really were born with a genetic endowment? The conclusion so far is these families have unusual genetic endowments. What they're trying to do with these studies is figure out ultimately if there's something other than health habits, something in the genetic makeup that might be synthesized into a drug someday.
I'm putting my money on stem cell research.
Stem cell research may very well produce these things in the long run. But I'm telling you that I talked to so many scientists, not just for this book, but over the years, and they believe I'm completely in favor of stem cell research. Most of them believe the fruits of stem cell research, embryonic stem cell research, are more likely to benefit our children and grandchildren than us. And that is no argument against stem cell research. It makes it more important. But for us, the boomers, and the society that is going to have to support our longer lives in the medical universe as it is, to count on that happening for us. Alzheimer's, for instance, we now know that it is a process that begins long before there are symptoms. If you and I are going to get Alzheimer's, there's probably already a disaster occurring in our brains right now.
We mentioned earlier that women outlive men on the whole. The difficulties for women in their old age greater than those for men?
Yes, primarily because one of the reasons is that they do outlive men, and more women get to the age when they are more disabled. In other words, if as many men lived into their 90s, they might well be as disabled as women. They live longer, but also economically, the problems of longer life are greater for women. A lot of women just automatically become poor when their husbands die, unless their husbands were very rich.
If they quit working to stay home with the kids, they didn't put as much money into Social Security.
That's right.
That's
right.
And pension plans.
And even although boomer women have more of a work history than our mothers did, nevertheless, the work history of most women is interrupted, and they don't go into old age with as much of a pension or Social Security as men do.
Is that one of the reasons we're seeing so many older women resort to plastic surgery, dyeing their hair and doing all sorts of other things to look younger than they are?
No. I think this is not even more.
I mean, you don't see that as much with men. Fewer men are dying.
Unless they're in the television business.
We're doing those commercials.
Right. I think that women are more interested in the way they look, and probably older women who are dying and streaking their hair are doing what they've done always. Now, I received a nasty email on my author website from a woman who had just read my book who said, you know, you talk about the problems of the old, and so why do you choose such a young hairstyle? Her basic point was that old women ought to cut their hair. I wrote her an email back, which I do occasionally from my author website since they don't have my – and I said, well, thank you very much, but who is it who decreed that older women have to cut their hair? You have a very nice beard. Maybe older men should not have beards. This is ridiculous.
Has the denial of the problems and pains of old age kept us from having the political will to deal with these inevitabilities?
Well, I think really it's up to this boomer generation that's now turning 65, the boomers who are still working and active and capable of exerting political will in their 50s and 60s.
But do the younger boomers see some kind of generational connection to the ones who are turning 65?
I think that they will. There are things that have to be done, and it's not just more institutions for people who are demented. There are a lot of things we could do with the will to make life easier for old people. One of them is they all cost money, though. One of them is a better public transportation system. You and I live in New York. We are lucky. This is an assisted living community. We don't have to drive to have a life. But I can tell you from observing the lives of my mother and grandmother in Michigan and Chicago, in most of this country, when people can no longer drive, they can no longer have a life. This is something that circumscribes the lives of healthy old people. Even if they can't drive, they may be interested and able to do a lot of things, but they can't do it if they can't get there. There are all kinds of things. We could also pay for more home care to enable people to live independently in their homes.
And not force people to impoverish themselves to receive some of the services.
Exactly. You have to spend down every asset if you're going to get long-term care.
Susan Jacoby is the author of 9 books, most recently The Age of American Unreason. Her new one, the one we've been discussing, is Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. It is published by Pantheon. And I want to thank you so much for coming by and talking with us again today.
Thank you.